Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show by Silker Joe Show. Co-host Joe filling in for Alan today while he's on assignment, though probably shouldn't be filling in today at all because I, for some reason, I expected to hear the theme to my show when this hour started. And my show is a weekend show. Today is obviously Tuesday, not on the weekend, so let's hope that I can get my head out of that mode. Certainly, we all wish it could be the weekend. Alas, we're here on Tuesday. But if Alan were here with us on this Tuesday, he would give to you the show's mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, the Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. The Alan Nathan Show comes to you courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network, so I want to thank the Main Street Radio Network for assisting with all the monetary stuff needed to keep the show afloat, and for also their support of the First Amendment, because we say stuff that they disagree with sometimes, but they have yet to withdraw funding for the program, so we appreciate them keeping us on the air. Alan, of course, has, as the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist talk host in the country, been around since 1998, had the show since 1998. He is well familiar with the ins and outs of getting money for the programs just to keep them on the air. So he, of all people, would appreciate Main Street Radio Network's assistance. And you can show them some appreciation. Go to MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. Find out more about the Alan Nathan Show while you're at it. Find the podcast for the show. And also find the Silker Joe Show up there at MainStreetRadioNetwork.com. And Alan also has his website, AlanNathan.com, has his articles and columns up there as well. Sometimes when I say he's on assignment, he's writing one of those. So you can go check that out, AlanNathan.com. There's even some from earlier this year that he put up there back in, what was it, January when I said he was on assignment, something around there. Anyway, you can also find us on social media. Oh, we do want to thank the Salem Radio Network first. Before we go into our own social media stuff, just throw in that gratitude to the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. Anyway, we are on social media as well, on X at Main Street Radio. I almost said Twitter, but I didn't, because I've been trying to wean the word Twitter out of my vocabulary, even though it's hard to do, because I don't just like calling it X. Maybe if I spelled it out as EX or something. Anyway, we are on X at Main Street Radio, on X at Alan Nathan, but also on Facebook and Wimkin at Main Street Radio Network. And on those outlets, you might find the topics for the day. I got mine right here. Only 2 weeks into Trump's D.C. takeover, we see just how poorly the Democrats handle crime while Republicans begin investigating their lies about the actual numbers. How much of this pattern is repeated in other cities? Now, we've talked before on the show, both me and Alan, or is it Alan and I? I've seen both, and I've seen both declared grammatically correct, and I've seen grammatical arguments over both, so I really don't know. But anyway, moving onward into the actual topic, so we have this idea in D.C. that perhaps the crime figures we're seeing aren't all that accurate. It came from not political pundits. It didn't come from Republicans. It didn't come from Trump. It came from the president of the police union in D.C. He came out on media a month before the D.C. takeover happened. He came out and told the local news stations about how they have accused multiple people, officials, of faking the crime statistics. And here's how they do it. If a crime happens, I believe the example he gave was if someone was shot, then instead of reporting it as a shooting, some higher up in the police department, a police lieutenant or something, appears on the scene and tells the officers who are doing the actual investigation not to report it as a shooting, but to report it as just a patient taken or someone taken to a hospital for an injury. Leave out anything about there being a shooting or gunshot wounds or anything like that. And of course, there's the general soft on crime approach of the city, where in the instances where I guess a police lieutenant isn't available to come down and say that the chief wants them to misreport what happened, then they just outright just refuse to prosecute it, and boom, there's not a crime here because, well, it wasn't prosecuted, so how can you say it's a crime? And I refer to this instance where a gang member was a teenager, mind you, had a handgun illegally and was shooting a bunch of people. What did the prosecutor do? Dropped all the charges. And then that shooter went on to murder somebody. That is the... So instead of having two crimes there, in fact, if the first one had been enforced, then someone's life would have been saved from the second one. Then if you just remove the first one, though, and now you've only got the one crime from the person who committed several crimes, and you get to report that crime is down, even though it isn't. And, the police, the president of the police union there said it was just outright insane to believe, ridiculous was the word, ridiculous to believe that crime numbers are actually down, as city administration claims. Now we get to the case of the question, how many other cities are doing it? Now, congressional Republicans are investigating D.C. because I guess that's kind of the way the federal government has authority over D.C. or whatever. It's kind of their pet project here that they can do this. And also that's where everyone's at in the politics anyway, in D.C., around D.C., whatever. But one city that has been discussed having this sort of thing done is Chicago. And the mayor of Chicago said, no, we don't need it. We don't need it at all. But here we have on Fox News, reading this verbatim, one headline from this summer says it all, quote, at least 55 people shot, 8 fatally in 4th of July weekend, unquote. And this is coming from the Fox News article, Liz Peek, old friend of the show. Trump pranks Democrats into opposing something they've always claimed to support. Just as they did decades ago, Democrats are walking into a trap resisting what most citizens applaud. And this is referring to law enforcement. And, you know, actually we're seeing that play out here in the state of Virginia. A race for attorney general in the state, which apparently, last time I checked, that's what the parties are spending all the money on, or at least the Republicans are spending all their money on the attorney general race. But the Democrat candidate helped to pass a law that put a sex offender back out on the street, and then the sex offender went on to sex offend against an 11-year-old. And this sheriff on the commercial for it is talking about how he had to go arrest this person again because of the Democrat candidate, Jay Jones. He supported this law. Meanwhile, Jay Jones has this campaign coming out where he's got all these sheriffs and stuff from Democrat districts, mind you. I recognized one being from a city where there was no Republican state house candidate, and where there has not been a Republican mayor candidate in several elections, at least, because the city is just so solidly Democrat. So, of course, their police chief is going to come out in favor of the Democrat attorney general candidate. But I digress. It's one really bipartisan campaign ad there. But they're all coming out saying, oh, this guy's tough on crime. He's tough on crime. You know, except for that law he passed where sex offenders get out early and can go do their thing again and again and again as much as they care to. They left that part out. But so we see that soft on crime approach by Democrats, despite how they say they're tough on crime. I mean, gee whiz, like, you have the mayor of Chicago saying not only do they not need the National Guard or military occupation, as he put it, because crime is there's no problem in his city, but also crime is down in his city. But you look at the statistics for Chicago, and you gotta wonder if they are being doctored as well. Because here, just this AI overview from Google is telling us that crime started declining from late 2022 into 2025, and for some reason it peaked in 2020 and I guess 2021 as well. So why would crime, especially violent crimes, peak? Now, it's saying property crimes are increasing, but the rest are decreasing. But that doesn't make much sense now, does it? The population, they're increasing the smaller crimes, but the bigger ones are decreasing? Why would that be the case? I'd say the answer is that it isn't the case. Perhaps the bigger crimes are being reported as smaller ones, just like we saw in D.C. And we've seen some of those statistics reported elsewhere across the country where the bigger violent crimes are down, but then you have all these smaller crimes that are suddenly rising. Maybe it's because the violent crimes are being misreported, in which case Republicans have a lot more than D.C. to be investigating right now. And Democrats, I guess they're just doctoring these figures so they can look tough on crime while actually taking the side of the criminal. Again, as exemplified in this state of Virginia with their attorney general race, where you have the one attorney general candidate, the Democrat, Jay Jones, saying, oh yeah, look at me, I'm tough on crime. But then you have the record where his policy allowed a rapist to get out early and rape somebody, an 11-year-old. So that's where we are with the Democrats and their tough on crime approach. They're tough on paper because they're the ones writing the statistics on that sheet of paper, and it ain't worth the paper it's printed on. Anyway, we got more Al and Nathan Show coming up after this break, so stick with us.
Everyone's using it, but not everyone is talking about it, and that's AI in the workplace. Kelsey Warren, founder of the Seamless Coach LLC, shares why many employees say they're keeping this, along with their feelings about other technologies, to themselves, and what business and IT leaders can learn.
According to new research from Cox Business, 60% of Gen Z and millennials feel positive about the growing role of AI at work and use AI tools for everything from summarizing meetings to creative brainstorming. But about half of both groups are nervous to admit how much the role of AI technology plays in their productivity. Fear of job loss and uncertainty about companies' AI policies factor into employees' hesitancy to speak up. The survey also revealed that despite being confident in their ability to adopt new technology, nearly 70% feel overwhelmed by the number of tools they're expected to use at work.
For more information and to see the full survey, visit coxblue.com/workplace-tech-survey.
The spirit of Fred Rogers lives on when two hit spinoffs of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood come together for the first time. The Emmy-winning puppet series Don Quixote will welcome friends from the Emmy-winning Daniel Tiger's Neighborhood in a new crossover special premiering August 11th on PBS Kids. In Daniel Tiger Visits Someplace Else, Daniel Tiger meets Don Quixote, and the new pals embark on an epic adventure full of fun and surprises. The special episode even includes a new version of the classic Fred Rogers song Look and Listen, which encourages young viewers to ask questions to get to know someone better. Don Quixote co-executive producer Kristen DiQualo.
Bringing Don Quixote and Daniel Tiger together in this special has been a really exciting way for us to build on the legacy of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, which inspires everything that we do. And I can't wait for families to see Daniel in the colorful, joyful world of Someplace Else with Donkey and her pals.
The Don Quixote crossover special begins streaming Monday, August 11th on PBS Kids.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on. And know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
hey, you got this. Just breathe. Hey, hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show. Vice Over Joe Show co-host Joe filling in for Al today while he's on assignment. So I was talking in the last segment about all these cities doctoring their crime statistics, Trump deploying the National Guard to D.C. Well, he might deploy it to other cities as well, and there is some question, I guess, over his authority, too, for that sort of thing. You know, the media, they're trying to lump in Los Angeles and D.C. as if they're both the same thing, as if the same, you know, it's just an example of Trump's authoritarianism. When L.A., that was in response to riots, and D.C., well, the federal government can do this kind of thing in D.C. Trump is ultimately the ultimate law enforcement official there. So whether or not he has this authority remains to be seen, but he is deploying executive actions nonetheless about special units from the National Guard to deal with public issues like the, like, massive amounts of crime, however useful that might be, and whatever powers they might have. But joining us to talk about this, we have Michael Letts. He is CEO and founder of InvestUSA, a national grassroots nonprofit providing police with bulletproof vests that has aided agencies internationally. Michael has earned the Congressional Gold Medal Award for community service and has over 30 years of experience in law enforcement and is currently chaplain with several agencies, as well as the state constable for the state of South Carolina. Michael Letts, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Always a pleasure with you, Joseph. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yep, glad to have you. So what do you make of Trump's executive order here about these special units of the National Guard? I mean, what authority would these National Guard units have outside of D.C. or a riot as we saw in Los Angeles?
Well, I think it's an interesting play because, first of all, you know, there's the 10th Amendment. But the 10th Amendment has the provisions for troops can be used inside American boundaries if there's a national emergency. And the question becomes, is crime a national emergency? Well, you know, in the olden days, Joseph, we didn't have to talk about it because there were enough law enforcement to keep things contained. You know, when they began to change policies, and this is one of the things the Democrats failed to think ahead. Because when they were pushing defund the police, Black Lives Matter, you have to either get a COVID vaccine or you're fired. They didn't realize that they would lose. You remember when Joe Biden took office, we had roughly 1.4 million sworn officers across the country. When he left, we had under 700,000. That's almost a 50% decline. And so the question now becomes, is that enough to provide law and order and safety? And the answer is blatantly no. And so we are having to figure out it is a national emergency. It is a national crisis all across the country. And we're having to do whatever is necessary using all assets of the U.S. government to bring it back to a level playing field so that we, A, get enough officers back out on the streets, and then, B, we bring down enough criminal element to where it can be contained with what we have. And so when they're trying to say you can't use the National Guard, no, there's no question it's a national crisis and it can't be utilized now. Do we want to always use the National Guard? I don't think that has ever been the intent of President Trump. It was to bring it into a compliance issue to where we had enough that law enforcement could do the job. Now, in having to do that, we certainly need guard units because it's obviously going to take us a little time to get that done, who are probably more trained and specialized. We have military police units in the Guard. Something similar to that, that where we concentrate on also not just military policing, but we also concentrate on civil crowd control, et cetera. And I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. And certainly we would need that crowd control because, as we saw in Los Angeles, attempts to enforce law led to riots. And then you also have all these protests in D.C. How long before those go into riots? And come to think of it, one of the items that was disrupted pretty early on was pretty much a full-blown riot happening in one of the parks in D.C.
Correct. It was. And that was probably one of the key elements of the straw that broke the camel's back, for lack of a better way to put it. President saw that on that Sunday. The next morning, he held the press conference. Enough of this. We're federalizing, and we're going to take over. And it was the right thing to do. You know what's interesting, Joseph, is we knew, I knew, we all knew as Americans, that it would make common sense to be, it would be a successful program. The more presence you have, the less crime you have. But never in our wildest dreams did we think it'd be so successful as it is now, where you have cities all across the country, Chicago, Detroit, New York, L.A., Seattle, Portland, Dallas, that are sending in videos, minorities in those areas are sending in videos saying, please don't stop at D.C. Please send a unit over here to help us. We deserve to be safe and secure as well. And so the Democrats have just totally missed the boat on this, and they're going to be pay a big price at the polls. They think they know that. That's why they're trying to discredit the program. You can't discredit a program when the numbers show how successful it's being.
Yeah, well, the best they can do is doctor up the numbers, which doesn't seem to make much sense to me the way they go, because they talk about, oh, we have this decrease in violent crime. Sure, you have an increase in minor crimes, but you have a decrease in violent crimes. And it's like, really? So police officers, the overall in the nation, that's down by 50%, as you said, and you're telling us that... that somehow means that we have less violent crime going on in that environment?
Not at all. In fact, and I've been involved with those numbers for decades, and it's amazing how they manipulate them. You know, people don't understand there's a agency within DOJ called the Bureau of Justice Assistance that's controlled by the FBI that calculates those numbers. And here's what they do. They send out a survey to every police department, every municipality, all agencies in all 50 states. And first of all, so we've got roughly 14,000 agencies, 15,000 agencies across the United States. They get less than 10% come back. You say, why is the participation so poor? Because agencies know they're not going to pay attention to the numbers you put. They're going to pay their own numbers anyway. And so because of that, they don't do anything with them. And so they don't send them back. So their numbers represent less than 10%. And then they tell you how they want those numbers to be. By the way, don't count any crimes from illegal immigrants. That's in a different category. We're looking at that separately. And so it's not reflective at all of what really is out on the street. And Americans know that. You can tell me it's safe all day long. When I don't feel safe, that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of D.C. residents are saying, too. You know, despite assurances from the mayor that crime is down 30%, which what the president of the chiefs, the president of the police union in D.C. said was laughable, the mayor still came out and said that, and everyone's trying to tout that statistic. But then the people on the ground in D.C., who at least the ones who don't live in the high-income sections, are going, no, this maybe that's your number, but that's certainly not what I'm feeling.
Exactly. And usually what you're feeling is what's really happening.
Yeah, it's hard to deny the reality right in front of your face when it's happening to you. I mean, it kind of reminds me of this video where there are people who could do that, though, because there's this video going around social media where some left-wing chick is from Chicago is talking about how she got carjacked, but she doesn't want Trump to come and do anything about crime there.
Our society really has gotten some nuts. We really do. And I don't know where they came from, but I hope they'd like to go back and stay there because we don't need those kind of people in America today.
No, and that seems to be the kind of demographic that the Democrat Party is trying to appeal to with its approach to crime, where they're generally very soft on it, and to make up for it, they take advantage of the decades-long lying of statistics.
Exactly. They're good at it. You have to give them credit for it, Joseph. Yeah.
Well, Michael, let's appreciate you being on the Al Nathan Show today. And where can our listeners find out more about InvestUSA?
God bless America. Thank you so much.
Yep. Glad to have you. And listeners, InvestUSA, it is a charity, so you can go find out more about them at, I believe it is InvestUSA.org. Is there a hyphen in there, like the name of the InvestUSA? No, there is not a hyphen. It is InvestUSA.org, no hyphen. Anyway, folks, we got more Al Nathan Show coming up after this break, so stick with us.
Substance use and mental health often go hand in hand. Research shows that teens who struggle with their mental health are more likely to use drugs and alcohol. That's why the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention launched the Free Mind campaign to help prevent substance use and overdose among youth ages 12 to 17. As a parent or caregiver, you play a powerful role. Staying connected with your teen can reduce their risk for drug use. Before you talk to them about drugs, talk to them about how they're really doing. And remember, empathy is key. Ask questions, listen without judgment, lead with compassion, let them know they're not alone. Because sometimes, an open and honest conversation between you and your teen can make all the difference. Learn how to start a conversation at cdc.gov/freemind/parents. That's cdc.gov freemind/parents. Sponsored by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
It's a well-known fact that guys often skip the doctor when they're sick and delay important health screenings. During Men's Health Month in June, encourage the men in your life to break that bad habit and take charge of their health. Vince Dorsey, a pharmacist and director of medical communications at Esperion Therapeutics, says a great way to start is with a cholesterol test.
The best defense is a good offense. High cholesterol has no symptoms. That's why it's called the silent killer. Don't put it off. Get your cholesterol tested and know your family's health history. You may not realize it, but high cholesterol can be an inherited genetic condition, putting otherwise healthy people, even in their 20s, at risk for heart disease. If you have high LDL or bad cholesterol, it is best to address this as soon as possible. There are ways to lower these levels, reducing your risk of heart attack or stroke.
If you or someone you love has high LDL cholesterol, your doctor may recommend lifestyle changes and medication to keep it in check. Visit heart.org to learn more.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show. The Soaker Joe Show co-host Joe filling in for Alan today while he is on assignment. We're talking about crime in all of our cities. You know, something my mother noted the other day was how it was one of the local cities around here. They were talking about, oh, crime's dropped by 15% or 20%, or murders have dropped 15-20% over this time last year. But, like, when you look at the actual numbers of murders, it was, like, dropped from 11 to 9 or something like that. Just a really low number. But then, so instead of counting the number, they're just counting the overall percentage, which, you know, kind of It makes it look like a bigger drop than it is, but it also makes it look like there's been a lot more murders than there were. But there probably have been a lot more than there were. I mean, I was talking with a cab driver one time, and when... Was it a cab driver? I needed... One of the local auto dealers had a transportation arrangement, and they drove me back to pick up my car after I had to drop it off. Very nice of them. I think it was free with the service, which was very nice. But the driver was telling me about how there are a ton of crimes that just do not get reported, or the police will bury it or whatever. And, you know, this was 2 years ago that he's talking about that. And now you just heard our last guest, Michael Etz, 30 years in law enforcement, and he's talking about how there's all of this burying of statistics and figures, so you really can't tell how bad the crime is unless you go out in your area and experience it yourself, and, well, there's the problem. That's kind of a catch-22 right there. You don't know how much crime there is until you experience it, but if you experience it, if it's a murder, you're really not going to know how much there is now, will you? So that's the problem that the Democrats have left us with. And I guess, really, it's been statistical rot over the years as well, with the law enforcement agencies feeling they can dictate the path that crime has taken in the U.S. I mean, how do we even know? We should question Republican districts at this point, I guess. Are they really safer? Are they also doing the same doctoring and numbers shenanigans as everyone else does? We don't know that. All we know is that numbers are faked. So it's up to you. What do you experience in your life? And that is part of what's driving this issue in D.C., actually. What do you experience in your life? On the one hand, you have on MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough. Joe's talking about how D.C. is just like a cesspool of crime. Even compared to New York City, it's a cesspool of crime, and it always has been the entire time he's been associated or affiliated with the city, ever since he was a congressman there. So, and he has Democrats calling him up and saying that they're secretly in favor of what Trump is doing. And that is, then you have this other faction of them who are saying, well, there's no crime in my area. I feel safe walking the street where I'm at. But you look at the area they're in, it's a pretty darn nice neighborhood. There's not going to be crime there. Average household value, $630,000. Average income, $120,000. Boy, well, in D.C., I guess with the D.C.'s cost of living, maybe that qualifies as poverty level. But anywhere else, that's pretty darn good. Heck, that's triple everything around here, or around where I live, at least in my house anyway. It's triple the property values around here. Well, maybe double now. We're catching up to that. But that's the nature of the situation, though, where you have just, unfortunately, the folks that are actually being listened to are that small minority. And they're the ones who are being touted by the media, that small group. The actual people who are the victims of the crimes and whatnot, the ones who suffer the most when you doctor statistics, the ones... That's the same demographics that the Democrats claim to be the ones to champion. The poor, the impoverished, the ones who are being oppressed. Oh, by the way, we're not going to bother with law enforcement in your area. Screw you. And then we're going to doctor the numbers so that when you get shot and are taken to the hospital, it's not reflected as a shooting. It's reflected as you just had a nice little trip to the hospital because you had a bump. You fell down the stairs. It's kind of almost a domestic abuser situation. You weren't shot. You fell down the stairs. And people are just fed up with it. Again, as you heard in the last segment, there's videos coming in all over the country of this very people Democrats claim to stand for and to be protecting with their anti-law enforcement stance and their crime figure doctoring, saying, we need what Trump is doing, or something like it here. You know, all these folks in Chicago, Portland, Seattle, Baltimore, whatever, all the folks who are afraid of Trump coming in and doing their job for them, all they have to do is do their job. And then Trump will have no cause to go there. Suddenly, I mean, all the Maryland governor has to do is authorize the National Guard, surge their presence in Baltimore for a little bit, work with the Baltimore police and, you know, figure out the proper way to use that. Everything's fine. And actually, I think this was on the 4th of July. No, this wasn't the 4th of July. This was beginning of August, like the 4th of August, maybe not the 4th of July. But there was this party that got out of control in Baltimore, ended up in a shooting right down the street from someone you've heard on this show before, William Hellman. He assisted me at CPAC. He's been a guest on the show talking about the voter fraud and stuff he saw in Baltimore. And there was a shooting just down the street from him. So there is, all you have to do is know where these areas are. They're pretty obvious. It's not like anyone's trying to hide that these crimes are going on there. And boom, you send in, you search the law enforcement in those areas, and you use the National Guard as Trump is using them in D.C. But, you know, the state governors can authorize it to be used in their own cities in the state, right? So why can't they just do that? Why is it that instead of copying Trump's moves and taking credit for it, they're waiting until Trump does it for them in their own state? Like, what is the gambit that Democrats are playing with this? They see the demand for it, and they know they can only lie about the statistics for so long. I mean, what, do they think it's like that book 1984 where everyone just believes the phony statistics that they've been fed every day and that they're just hoping the population's so dumb that they're not going to realize the crime right in front of them is clearly worse than it ever was before? Do they not pay attention to all those old folks who are like, wow, this never happened in the neighborhood I've lived here X amount of years. This has never been this bad before. You know, neighbors talk. I guess Democrats kind of forgot about that during the pandemic. Maybe that's why they wanted us locked down, because neighbors talk to each other. They know what's up. People who've been in an area a long time will tell you, you know, this stuff never happened before. So how are you saying that this area is safer when clearly it has declined over the years? And maybe they're just hoping that they can finagle the statistics enough to be believable, but also enough to cover their butts and make it look like they're doing something instead of actually doing something. But again, why the reticence to go out there and do it? Is it, as our last guest would posited, that because they were during the pandemic and all that, they hopped on the Black Lives Matter bandwagon and never got off? Well, we've seen Democrats part with that before. Heck, we've seen Black Lives Matter activists part with that narrative in the past. So the anti-policing narrative. So perhaps the Democrat Party overall just is so removed from reality that they just think anything Trump does is bad, so we can't do it. Even if it's good, even if it's what voters want, even if we have all these people saying they want it, we're going to find that tiny amount of people who say that they don't want it. We're going to make that look like the majority. Just like we lie about the crime numbers, we're going to lie about the people who are happy with the status quo. And they know that they're going to be safe, too. They know no one's going to vote them out of office. This idea that, oh, Democrats in these cities, oh, if they don't have crime fixed, they're going to revolt. Or if Trump shows them how crime is really, law enforcement is really supposed to act, they're going to vote Republican. No, none of that's going to happen. Come on, that's a fantasy. These people are going to vote Democrat no matter what. If Trump didn't do anything, if crime continued to increase while the city lied, and if it was proven that the city was lying, they'd still vote Democrat. That's the kind of lockdown these cities on. You don't think anything like this has happened in the last 50 years of uniparty rule in D.C., where the Democrats ran the city the whole time? No, they've had bad, if not worse, and still they kept voting Democrat. You know, they talk about crime being at 30-year lows. Well, that means that without doctoring the statistics, the crime was pretty high in the past, and still voted Democrat. No one got voted out of office for it. Everyone kept chugging along, doing the same thing that they've been doing. So they know there's no consequences for any of this. There's no consequences if you let crime get out of control. There's no consequences if you lie about the statistics. There's no consequences if you sit back, let Trump show you how the city is supposed to look, and then move on. Heck, just look at New York City, for example. They had the Republican Rudy Giuliani in. He did a great job with crime. Then they brought in a bunch of Democrats who are very pro-crime. And then now the city is almost as bad as it was when Rudy Giuliani took over. But still, they're voting Democrat. They're going to keep voting Democrat. They're about to put in some socialist who wants to abolish the prisons. You think that the Democrats learned their lesson about law enforcement when many of them have it in their memory what the city looked like under a Republican who actually gave a damn about controlling the streets? No. They're going to vote Democrat. And that's how it's going to be. There's going to be no consequence for any of this, regardless of how things look. So all you did, Trump, with this National Guard thing was show, yes, Democrats are bad. We already knew that. Anyway, folks, we got more Al and Nathan show after this break, so stick with us.
We have an active government relations program. They're very much involved in legislative work to not only improve the ADA, but to strengthen enforcement. The bottom line is a law with no enforcement is no law at all. But it's not just about legislative work. It's really just about public education. We want the general public, we want policymakers, we want business owners to understand that they have a role in knocking down barriers and making the world more accessible. We have an active campaign going on right now. Barriers still exist. If you go to our website, tva.org, you can find information about various types of barriers that are out there through our PSAs. We have a petition that we want to send to the United States Congress that calls for improved enforcement of the ADA. And ultimately, we just want to get everyone in the game. We want everyone to have a stake in knocking down the barriers that still exist because we believe in accessibility for all. To learn more, you can go to pva.org/barriers still exist.
We know summers are packed with activities, and Whataburger's got you covered with big flavor and big value. For a limited time this summer, you can order more for less with our bigger, better bundles. Just order your favorite Whatameal, and you can add on a bonus meal. You can add on a $4 kids Whatameal, a $5 double meat junior Whatameal, or $6 nine-piece Whata wings. Or if you're just feeding the kids, these bundles work for kids meals too. Just order a kids meal, and you can add on another one for just $4. Really is the perfect way to make sure everyone is fed and happy this summer. We've also got Whataburger's brand new Prickly Pear Raspberry Water Fresher. It's a bright, refreshing mix of zesty lemon, real raspberry, and a hint of prickly pear. If you haven't downloaded the app yet, download it now. We are full on into our summer of savings mode. We've got really special things coming up for our 75th birthday on August 8th. For more information, you can visit Whataburger.com.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm gonna keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries. From healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for that.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Al Nathan Show by Super Joe Show co-host Joe, filling in for Al today while he is on assignment. Thank you for sticking with us through this hour of the program. Got just this last segment here where we're joined by Jeff Dornick. He is founder and CEO of Pickaxe, the groundbreaking social media platform built on two uncompromising principles, freedom of speech and freedom of reach. He also hosts the Jeff Dornick Show, and his new book is called Following the Leader. Jeff Dornick, always happy to talk with you. How are you today?
Doing really well. Thanks for having me back on.
Yep, glad to have you. So we're talking now about this, first when I saw this headline from the guest booker, AI political action committees are getting millions of Silicon Valley's money to oppose leaders that want to regulate AI. I thought the darn political action committees were being ran by AI. But I guess we're not that far off from that happening, especially if there's if these action committees succeed in blocking AI regulations.
Yeah, well, it seems like that's the trend where, you know, Silicon Valley is very aligned with Trump, or you could say vice versa with the Trump administration, you know, with their push to deregulate artificial intelligence, and this new pack, which is called Leading the Future. And what they're actually trying to do is oppose candidates that are pushing for regulation on artificial intelligence, as well as support candidates that, you know, have what they call, you know, some limited guardrails when it comes to regulation. What they're trying to do is their PR is to be able to compete and outpace China in the development of artificial intelligence. The problem that we're facing is that, you know, there's a lot of concerns about violation of our constitutional rights, privacy rights, freedom of speech, all of that when it comes to the future of artificial intelligence. But then also it's just going to be centralizing power. It's going to be taking away resources like electricity and water from local communities. There's a lot of problems here. And it seems to me like super PACs like this are just looking for the best interests of Silicon Valley, not for what's the best interest of the American people.
Well, I thought that's what PACs generally did. They don't look at the American people at all. They look at AI. But, like, the people behind AI, too, they're the ones who are out there trying to sell it as being beneficial to mankind, though. I mean, a political action committee, yeah, you can understand what they're coming from, what they're going to do. But then when it comes to these people out there advocating, oh, AI is really going to help you, you know, they're not really in politics, but you kind of know their politics. But then we also have it across, it's both Elon Musk and Bill Gates. So it's like across the aisle, you have the same push. AI is going to be beneficial to mankind, but is it? Or is it just beneficial to them in the short term, to Silicon Valley in the short term?
Yeah, well, I would argue actually that in the short term, AI can actually be very beneficial to the individual and to all of us. Because, you know, when you think about it, a lot of us, you know, run small businesses and we use AI in order to streamline things. Or let's say you own like a small mom and pop, you know, restaurant. It may be wise to invest in AI to eliminate some of those, you know, employment costs and things like that. The problem is in the long term. And this is where in the long term, both Bill Gates and Elon and a lot of these other guys have said that AI and robots are going to replace all workers. They need for any human worker to be in the workforce, and that because AI and robots are going to do everything. Well, that's now a threat on our individual sovereignty and our ability to be self-sufficient, and it's basically going to lead us into this new era where we're going to be either completely dependent upon the governments or, worse yet, completely dependent upon these big tech overlords that run the AI and these, you know, robots. Elon is planning on rolling out something like more than a billion of his Optimus AI controlled robots over the next handful of years. They're going to do all sorts of tasks or replace the need for human beings virtually at all. So in the long term, I think that this is a play for the centralization of power to a handful of very wealthy elites, and then the rest of us are going to be completely dependent upon them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you know that they'd have back doors built into it, or the government would have back doors built into it. And also this really risks the infrastructure because, you know, humans, yes, you can bribe a human to sabotage something or to be asleep on the job or something like that. But you got to go to each human. With the AI, though, you just got to have one back door, and then every AI is vulnerable. Every machine that uses it is vulnerable.
Right. Well, and also on top of that, and I always remind everybody that AI is only as good as the programmer, and AI is only as good as the database that they're pulling from. And so, you know, even let's just say that there are no backdoors to the federal government. That's fine. But you know, now what you're saying is that now we're going to be completely trusting of these, you know, big tech companies and these AI platforms to be completely neutral, which we know they very rarely, if ever, actually are. They're always going to be pushing particular bias, particular agendas, particular worldviews of the programmers and of the data sets that they're pulling from. And I think that's the concern is that I think that AI is that these big tech AI companies are actually going to have more power and control over our lives than even our own federal government, which is extremely dangerous to our freedoms, to our civil liberties, and to our constitutional rights.
So it is in the federal government's best interest to just ignore all the money coming in from the Political Action Committee and go ahead and create legislation so that they at least have some say in regulating AI. Although, you know, they always say that Congress, when it passes legislation, it's for yesterday's problems. So, like, even if they did do anything about regulating AI, how could we really, how much confidence will we have that it would be the right thing to do or based on the status of the technology right now, as opposed to the understanding of a 90-year-old congressman based on what his staffer told him?
Right. Well, but again, this comes back to, okay, what are the general principles and what's the role of the federal government? The federal government's job is to protect and preserve our constitutional rights. And those, a lot of times, can be very general principles. And, you know, Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI, has already said that in the future of AI, it's not conducive to a constitutional republic like what we have because it's going to be violating our constitutional rights. So he's actually proposing that we have a new social contract that basically it's null and void of the Constitution, and we're going to have some sort of new relationship with AI and the federal government and all that. And so, you know, to me, if there's going to be legislation and there's going to be regulations, it needs to be to preserve the constitutional rights of the American people, which I think can be a very general principle that doesn't have to be super specific to the technology. So there's definitely some solutions that even a 90-year-old senator or congressman could actually apply if they would actually enforce it.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully that some action is taken in this and all the money flowing in is being ignored. We got about a minute left here, though, so give you some time here to tell us about Pickaxe.
Yeah, definitely. It's a new social media platform that we've got. It's live right now at pickaxe.com. We're dropping the iOS and Android app here in the next couple of weeks. But, you know, it's a way that you can actually implement your free speech rights. So, you know, we're not going to restrict speech. We don't have manipulative algorithms. We don't collect your data. What we're trying to do is amplify your voice, you know, and as opposed to all these big tech companies that are trying to use your voice in order to amplify their technology. So that's what we got. You guys can sign up at pickaxe.com.
All right, listeners, you can go do that. I want to thank the CEO of Pickaxe, Jeff Dornick, for being on the Alan Nathan Show today. And listeners, of course, our websites are mainstreetradionetwork.com and alannathan.com. And currently, maybe we'll start one on Pickaxe eventually, but right now we're just on X at Main Street Radio and X at Alan Nathan, and also Facebook at mainstreetradionetwork.com. Well, there's no .com on that one. That's just our website. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.